This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
It focuses primarily on Southern Africa, and it also uses disinformation to help prop up favored regimes. We see this particularly in Zimbabwe.
That was Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies on China's use of disinformation campaigns in Africa. Details coming up. Also, South Africa's Parliament Speaker has resigned over corruption allegations. And French President Emmanuel Macron says he thinks France and its allies could have stopped Rwanda's 1994 genocide. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. South Africa's former parliament speaker, Nosiviwe Mapisi Nkakula, surrendered to police today, a day after resigning over corruption allegations that some analysts say could cost the ruling African National Congress in next month's elections. The National Prosecution Authority docket says Nkakula allegedly received over tens of thousands of dollars in bribes from a person who got a contract with the Department of Defense when she was heading it. Tusokumalo reports from Johannesburg.
By 8 a.m., Nosiviwe Mapisi Nkakula was at the Lydenton police station to turn herself in. She was then formally charged and taken to court in Pretoria, where prosecutors said she is facing 12 charges of fraud, corruption, money laundering, and racketeering. She was released on $2,678 bail. Yesterday, a court ruled against Nkakula's appeal to block her arrest. Opposition parties, who were already preparing for a motion of no confidence against her, welcomed her arrest, describing the case as an embarrassment to the governing African National Congress. Reverend Kenneth Meshwe is the leader of the African Christian Democratic Party.
While she thought of going to court to stop her arrest does not make sense, and I'm still trying to grapple with the question of, did she think that the court would agree with her? Why did she do that? But finally, at least, we are pleased that she did what she was expected to have done from the beginning.
In her resignation letter, Mapisa Nkakula said she wants to protect the image of Parliament and get a chance to clear her name. But political analyst Levin Doe says she had no option since both the ANC and Parliament could not afford to bear the damage that staying on could create.
Mapisa Nkakula also knew she has got nowhere else to run. She wanted to consult and then take a decision that, in a view, she could be able to escape any form of political embarrassment. And I think what she did was to avoid all those embarrassments, and that's why she decided to resign.
With elections less than 2 months away, political analyst Sandy Leswana says her issue leaves the ANC in a tricky position.
It's not going to be easy, but it's an old issue. The issue of corruption and the ANC is an old issue, and it is there. The voters know about it, and I think it has been costing the ANC over time.
However, ANC First Deputy Secretary General Nomvula Mokonyane told VOA that the party has a clear election message for the voters.
And then issued a statement welcoming her decision to resign as a member of parliament and as the speaker. We have a message, we've got our priorities, we've got a plan, we will be able to engage with the voters based on that.
The ANC, which led efforts to end the old apartheid system, has governed since the country established full democracy in 1994. With corruption allegations hanging over other senior government and ANC officials, as well as a struggling economy, some political analysts say the party risks losing power in the May election. Meanwhile, President Cyril Ramaphosa says the former speaker's resignation must be applauded as it affirms the rule of law. Thuso Khumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
A recent study by the Africa Center for Strategic Studies in Washington shows that the proliferation of disinformation is a fundamental challenge to stable and prosperous African societies. China's Africa-focused media tries to improve African perceptions of China and its political system while disparaging the United States. Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, discussed these with VOA senior analyst Mohamed Al-Shenawi.
Well, China, through the CCP, is the second leading sponsor of disinformation on the continent with 17 documented campaigns. And it is increasingly seeing the viability of disinformation. So we're seeing China do a lot more on the disinformation front in recent years. It focuses primarily in Southern Africa, and it also uses disinformation to help prop up favored regimes. We see this particularly in Zimbabwe. But the Chinese approach is more institutionalized. It tries to control information and communications technology infrastructure, signs agreements with African media houses to promote content from Chinese state-owned media, and it uses bots to amplify official Chinese statements and positions to inauthentically give the appearance of widespread support and popularity.
With the serious threat of disinformation in Africa, especially by Russia and China, how could the U.S. counter that and help African countries against such campaigns, which is using the social media outlets as a medium for spreading these disinformation campaigns?
Well, there's a number of things that can be done. I think the most important thing is to help strengthen African capacity. African actors are going to be the best representatives and actors to combat disinformation in Africa. And in the process, reestablish African agency over their information space. And so this means working with journalists, media outlets, research groups, fact checkers, to help build capacity. Disinformation is becoming increasingly sophisticated. And so it takes a very particular skill set to identify it, to expose it, to report on it. But you know, these counter-disinformation actors shouldn't have to reinvent the wheel. There's already been a lot of lessons learned on the continent, but also in Europe and in Asia, where there have been successful counter-disinformation campaigns. And so the idea is to borrow and borrow those lessons learned, apply them in Africa, and help link up networks of counter-disinformation actors so that they're seeing the common patterns of these campaigns and the tactics and the messages, and more quickly identifying them and talking about them so that they can inform and inoculate the public against them. Over the long term, this is going to require helping build up the capacity of African media, because when you have credible media outlets trusted by the population, it really helps marginalize disinformation, because citizens will go to those trusted outlets, and they aren't as easily influenced by these disinformation campaigns. And so that's going to require building up, again, the capacity and the skill sets of those managing and operating these media outlets. But it's also going to require figuring out different financing models, because so many African media outlets are just working on a shoestring. And so they're very open to taking support from some of these foreign authoritarian actors who want to usurp the message and promote their own disinformation.
That was Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, speaking with VOA's Mohamed Al-Shenawi. The office of French President Emmanuel Macron today said he thinks France and its Western and African allies could have stopped Rwanda's 1994 genocide, but did not have the will to do it. A presidential official said that in a video message to be published Sunday to mark the 30th anniversary of the slaughter of an estimated 800,000 people, mostly ethnic Tutsis, Macron will emphasize that the international community had the means to know and act. The president will not be in Kigali for commemorations of the genocide this Sunday alongside Rwandan President Paul Kagame. France will be represented by Foreign Minister Stéphane Séjourné. Former U.S. President Bill Clinton will lead an American delegation. Macron, during a visit to Rwanda in 2021, recognized France's responsibilities in the genocide, but he stopped short of an apology. Kagame, who led the Tutsi rebellion that ended the genocide, has said a stronger statement is needed. Sudan's prosecution office is accusing former Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok of inciting war against the state and other charges that could carry the death penalty. The French news agency AFP says 15 other people, including journalists and politicians who, like Hamdok, live abroad, face similar charges such as violating the constitution. The prosecutor's office is loyal to military chief Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, whose regular armed forces have been at war since April 2023 with the paramilitary rapid support forces led by Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo. Hamdok, Sudan's most prominent civilian politician, was the country's first premier in a fragile transition following a popular uprising after decades under Omar al-Bashir's rule. Hamdok was placed under house arrest after an October 2021 coup by Dagalo and Burhan. After a brief reinstatement, Hamdok resigned in January 2022 and fled to Abu Dhabi. He has since re-emerged as part of a new coalition known as Takadum. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Doctors working in Kenyan state-run hospitals today rejected a government offer to end a three-week-old strike. This as a court set a deadline for the dispute to be resolved. Some 7,000 members of the Kenya Medical Practitioners, Pharmacists and Dentists Union walked out in mid-March in demand of improved pay and better working conditions. The French news agency AFP reports that the labor court in Nairobi suspended the strike last month. Yesterday, it ordered that negotiations to end the stalemate be completed in 14 days. The decision came a day after the government said it would meet some of the medics' demands, including paying arrears and hiring trainee doctors on permanent contracts. But the union voiced deep dissatisfaction with the offer and said the government has ended negotiations until the strike is called off. It also said the proposed offer did not have legally binding commitments. The impact of global warming is hitting Africa's economic growth as scorching temperatures are hitting countries from the Horn of Africa to West Africa and North Africa to Southern Africa. Research conducted by Afrobarometer, a pan-African and non-partisan survey research network, suggests parts of Africa are becoming drier and hotter, while an increase in rainfall in others is causing devastating floods and displacing many people. To provide more insight on this matter, VOA's Pauline Diho spoke with Dr. Boniface Dulani, Director of Surveys at Afrobarometer, based in Zomba, Malawi.
This is becoming a regular occurrence. You know, Malawi is not even, it's a landlocked country. And I remember growing up, you know, issues to do with the cyclones, tropical storms, we would only hear about them in the news. we never got to experience them. But in recent years, the cyclones are not only hitting countries that are on the seashore, that have boundaries with the sea, but they are traveling so far inland to affect countries like Malawi. Last year, Southern Africa, especially Malawi, Mozambique, and some parts of Zimbabwe were hit badly by Cyclone Freddy. Here in Malawi, more than 1,000 people died from Cyclone Freddy, and thousands, even more, were displaced, and as we speak, are still living in camps. So, and of course, this warning for a new cyclone is coming against a backdrop of a drought that was also hit again this same part of the world, Malawi, Zambia, that has affected, I think, the maize crop, which is the staple food, and there is likelihood of a severe famine coming up because of that drought. So these are just some of the many challenges that we face. On one hand, as I said, a drought that is being followed by threats of a cyclone as well. And generally speaking, the people are just not prepared for this kind of disasters.
A lot of people talk about climate change. Very few people really understand the impact and scale this climate change has had on so many different parts of the world. You live in a country that is prone to cyclones, that is prone to different variations of weather. How would the ordinary person cope with this kind of stuff?
Now, if you ask every Malawian what a cyclone means or Cyclone Freddy, they will tell you that, yes, we know how devastating these cyclones can be, because these are things that now we are having to encounter and experience every year. 2-3 years ago, it was Cyclone Idai. Last year, it was Cyclone Freddy. And now there are also talks of this new cyclone. And this is just a testament to little climate change. So this is a reality for most people. So when we hear, people that say, oh, there's no such thing as climate change, I would say, come and talk to Malawians, come talk to Mozambicans, come talk to Zambians, Zimbabweans, and indeed most of the citizens on this continent that are now seeing unseasonal rains. Last week, I was talking to a colleague in Ghana, and he was telling me that it's been raining, for the last 2-3 weeks, raining heavily. And this is not the rainfall season in Ghana. And again, just to show you that, things have changed. And we are, living through that period of climate change.
That was Dr. Boniface Dulani, Director of Surveys at Afrobarometer Base in Zomba, Malawi, speaking with VOA's Paul Indiho. The International Monetary Fund, IMF, has concluded its visit to Ethiopia to discuss a request for IMF support. Reuters reports that the two sides failed to reach an agreement, leaving the country short of a commitment it made with its official international creditors. However, the IMF said in a statement that the team made substantial progress towards establishing how the IMF could support the authorities' economic program, and discussions will continue later this month in Washington. The Paris Club of Developed Creditor Nations, which does not include China, said last year that an agreement to suspend Ethiopia's debt payments through 2025 could be voided if the country did not secure an IMF loan by March 31st. It is not clear whether Paris Club members would enforce the deadline. Ethiopia reached a separate debt service suspension deal with China earlier in 2023. This week, the world marked Autism Awareness Day, which is set aside to educate the public about autism and support those suffering from it. The theme this year is Empowering Autistic Voices. Autism spectrum disorder is a development illness characterized by challenges with social skills, repetitive behaviors, and communication. About 1 in 100 children worldwide has autism, according to the World Health Organization. Virginia Kasiyama is founder of the JECC Behavioral Center in the U.S. state of Massachusetts and mother of a child with autism. She discusses the importance of autism awareness and tells VOA's Leonard Moudou she became an advocate due to the challenges and frustrations she faced when seeking care for her son.
As a mother, as a provider in the community that strives in the world day by day with children, individual with autism, it's providing support and giving power to individual with autism with the condition that they have been struggling, also meaning recognizing and have the opportunity, recognizing the individual with autism and have the opportunity they deserve in our society, in our community. So this team for this year is a very powerful team, which is we're raising awareness, we're educating, we're raising our voice to let the voice of the people with autism be heard.
Very interesting.
And providing respect and support to them.
You established, and I wanted to ask you this, you established the JECC Behavioral Center in Massachusetts. Talk to us about why it was so important for you to put this together and some of the pressing needs now for people living with autism. There have been advances in treatment, but what is next?
Thank you for the question. Yes, I am the founder of JECC Behavioral Center, and we provide at the center mental health and ABA services. ABA is mostly an intervention that is found evidence-based to meet the need for individuals with autism. If I can explain it, it's a sort of therapy one-on-one with children and family that raising children with autism is an effective treatment that has been responded well for majority of individuals with autism. JECC has found from an inspiration to a mother who I am of a child with autism that faced a lot of health disparity.
That was Virgin Kasimi, founder of the JECC Behavioral Center in Massachusetts here in the U.S. She was speaking with my colleague, Leonard Moudou. Ivory Coast inaugurated its first solar power plant yesterday as part of a drive to generate 45% of its energy from renewable source by 2030. The 37.5-megawatt plant is in the northern town of Bondiali. The French news agency says it is expected to improve the electricity supply to more than 430,000 households with a focus on villages. But it represents only a small part of Ivory Coast's power production, two-thirds of which is provided by thermal energy and the remainder mainly by hydroelectric dams.
VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Von D, and our engineer, Kayla Williams, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.